to wrap this up, my presentation will be a little bit more tactical than Foster O'Neill's presentation on institutional aspects. Just a little bit about me first. So I'm Deputy Secretary in Defence. I've been in this role for about 6 years, delivering infrastructure and services. But I've been in defence essentially all my life, starting with British Defence. Organization for 20 years on projects and on time for Australia in 2003, probably. Can you manage to just do stuff? Good. So, it's a large green arrow that says, just for the right. Not the small red one, I think, yeah. So, this is my role in the Department of Defence. It's really about delivering infrastructure that is strategically aligned to the needs of the Department of Defence, enables defence capability and safe and secure for people to use that infrastructure. I also provide a range of services and defence places, so I do we'll get to the details of those in a minute. And it's services like hospitality and catering, access control, grounds maintenance, building maintenance, everything you need to keep a small town going, including firefighting. So, as well as building infrastructure, where you operate the infrastructure and run the defence bases, and defence bases are a bit like a small town. The other thing I don't really do is ICT and upstream, which is the thing at the moment. So, while I have an eye on the future and an eye on where's defence going strategically, I'm also very deeply into the here and now and how are we going to deliver essential services to ensure the Australian Defence Force can be as effective as it can be. When I look at the resources that I've got under management, we start at the left-hand side, around 1,800 people, some of whom are members of the Australian Defence Force working in my group. But the actual largest workforce I've got is defence industry. So on any day of the week, there are around 6,500 people in defence industry. Companies like Spotless and Broad Spectrum and Veolia, Wilson Security, 6,500 people will be on a defence place and they're delivering the services and the contracts to my organisation. On top of that, there's something of the order of 4,000 people who are on a defence place and they're building infrastructure. So that gets you to somewhere around 10,000 people on top of my workforce. And that's the workforce that actually delivers the enabling capability of the defence estate. My workforce is about half and half now and from there. And a lot of junior people, because a lot of the services we deliver, and obviously we deliver some services ourselves, and fairly junior people within those services. When we look at the asset base of defence, 600 properties, close to 3 million hectares, we're just acquiring some more land at the moment, and 30,000 built structures, or thereabout. Allegedly, gross replacement value of $68 billion. The figure to which I am deeply skeptical about because it has not changed in the 6 years I've been in the industry. I don't know much about economics, but I'm not sure that's wrong. And I look at what it costs with a redevelopment base, $1 billion, and I redevelop about a third of the base. And I've got 70 major bases. The budget is spending about $5.3 billion this year. That's increasing, and I'll have a look at that in a minute. And on the slide, you can see roughly where the big lumps of that go. So it's roughly $2 billion of capital investment into new infrastructure. There's a couple of things on there for safe works and safe upkeep. That's really maintenance. So it's $1.1 billion of maintenance, $400 million of service provision, and a large, nearly $700 million of providing housing off the defence base through the Defence Housing Australia organisation to which I hold a contract with. And I provide between 16,000 and 17,000 houses for defence funds in the first place. So we run that like a contract between two government organisations. So that does not add up to $5.3 billion, and the difference is wages, salaries and that sort of thing. So it's a fairly large organisation. I've often wondered where we'd be on the ASX if we were able to be somewhere in the top half of that coalition. At the moment, we've got a process of recapitalisation of the defence estate ongoing. And I'll just talk a little bit about the history of why that's happening and how we got there. Capability, defence capability, is intrinsically linked to the defence estate. without effective places, effective training areas, airfields, wharves, and the like, you can't train on Australian Defence Force to be effective. So capability is linked to the idea of logistics, so, as well as it's linked to like, a whole range of other things. I think as was said earlier, defence capability is not just about the latest vehicle, plane, or ship. Actually, the thing, it really is about an integrated system of fundamental and basic capability that come together, one of which is the defensive state. And it's very important. But the defensive state was, is degraded. We've been looking at this for a few years, and we have some data. When we started looking between 2001 and 2015, I think we're developing the 2016 white paper, we could see the remaining useful life of the defensive state reduced. 2001, it was 22 years. By 2015, it was down to around 15 years. So you can't keep investing at the level you're investing at if the remaining useful life of your asset base is gradually deteriorating. So we use that information in the white paper conversation through 2015 to win a significant uplift in funding for the defensive state, which I'll get onto in a minute. And that uplift in funding is over 2 decades, and it's a fairly significant amount. But worth looking at this slide that was part of the Defence White Paper in 2016, and worth looking at it because if you look at the dark blue piece on the left-hand side, that's the investment and enablers from the integrated investment programme that Defence now runs. It's not all state, of course, it's ICT, it's logistics, it's health, it's communication systems. The state is a significant chunk of that. 25% of the investment that defence is making in capital investment is into enablers. So things like submarines and land 400 and others are the headlines. It's a significant chunk of money. This is a significant uplift from what we were doing prior to that white paper. We're going to look at then at the state investment. This is my favourite chart, and whenever anyone's seeking to do a presentation, you can always get the gelato chart in there somewhere. It covers the period of my existence in this role, so it goes back to about 2013, and you can see at the left-hand end, the level of investment on the day I arrived was around $700 million in capital investment in this state. And the amount we're spending on maintenance is about half what it's taking today. So we're in a pretty difficult position. And you can see since then, and really as a consequence of the white paper, the funding levels have been increasing and up into the future, they're increasing too. Now, there are only two colours on this chart, there's pink and green. Yellow will become pink in due course. Pink is important because pink is infrastructure investment directly linked to new capability. So we're building a joint strike fighter, we need facilities specifically for that airplane, so that's green is a really important one, that's to stay on that. That's to keep defence bases alive, that's to keep training areas alive, that's to place in accommodation, that's to place in messing, that's to place in classrooms, that's keeping roads working, that's keeping runways working, that's keeping the walls working. And you can see at the left-hand end of this chart, I should go further back, even up until now, pink is dominating green, and you can see in the future green starts to dominate pink. And that's because we have this recapitalisation process where we're now looking at really getting the estate properly funded. And they're doing at least 20 to 30 years of underinvestment in the fundamentals of our defence estate. And just have to ask any soldier who has to stay in some of the accommodation at some of the places, and what the quality of the accommodations are. Some of them are brand new, most of them aren't. Now, we're looking at what, where some of this investment goes. So this is two photographs. These are both at a place we like to call Rough Base Williamtown. Some people call it Newcastle Airport. And of course, they're the same thing. Common use runway. The air base is on one side of the runway. The civil airport is on the other side of the runway. The left-hand photograph is a now completed five-story office block where hundreds of people will work. You might think that's quite boring. That is a triumph of common sense in the Department of Defence, because until then, we would build lots of small buildings for each unit in the Air Force, so they could have their own building and their own space, Now we're facing the world's economies of the series, and much more efficient to build and own, much more flexible to use better assets. So for us, an example of a sustainment project is future both alive and food supply of the series. On the right hand side, that's the aircraft hangars, aircraft maintenance area, crew rooms, planning facilities for the joint strike fighter. That's $1 billion worth of work you can see in that right hand photograph, and we're doing something similar to the Captain of the Northern Territory last time we met. So we intend to fight about that our joint strike fighters resident there now in Detroit, the one and we're arriving every few months. That building that you can see there, it's 150 metres by 150 metres underground, and the whole thing is a highly classified and highly secure facility. Very impressive, but very expensive. The part of that new capability and new capitalisation. Now, this is Garden Island in Sydney. Just for interest, the top two photographs on the left show where we are now, and on the right hand side, you can see the straightening of those walls. Those two walls you can see on the left hand side, or the left hand side of that picture, that they were common in the ocean. They were 100 years old. They've been completely replaced with a new improved wharf, which will mean that the big white trees that we've got can park carefully there and look so attractive to the cruise ship industry. And finally, into the future, this is a building that will house a telescope. This is in Western Australia. And the telescope's coming from the US, freely donated. And this is for moving Australia into space. So the telescope will track space objects in the orbit of the Apollo, our new and emerging space capability, which will be led by Air Force and the future of the I want to talk about two projects that we work on when we say this to the world and are very strategic partnerships with our allies. And the first one is the United States Force Posture Initiative, announced back in 2011. And this is about bringing Marines to train in the North Australia military, but they are also training in other training areas as well. So the Marine Rotational Force Guard and an enhanced air cooperation between the US air elements and Australian defence air elements. So this year, for the first time, we reached a target of 2,500 Marines in Australia training alongside Australian troops and others. This brings with it roughly $2 billion of infrastructure investment, which mostly in the Northern Territory. And we'll help us reach those strategic goals of interoperability with the Americans, better engagement in the Middle region, and a better ability to respond to crises in the Middle region, which would include KKDR tasks, the order of Russian tasks at the moment, so forth. But the estate is a significant part of this. The slide shows roughly what we're doing. The projects that have been delivered have started. The US has built their first project of West Coast in Darwin, and over the next 7 or 8 years, there will be a couple of $1 billion spent mostly in the Northern Territory and then back. Now, the second project I want to talk about is the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership with Singapore. It's expanding training ranges in Queensland, Australia Bay, in central Queensland, and a new training area in place of Greendale in North Queensland. We've bought the land for that, and we're now starting to do infrastructure works on both of those training areas. Basic stuff at the moment, fencing and the like, while we're planning a new range development that will roll out over the next 2 years. This investment is funded by Singapore. The land is owned by Australia, and the new ranges are primarily initially for Singapore's use, now expanded use. They're also being used by the Australian Defence Force. So these ranges will be modern, and they will integrate real world with the synthetic world, with augmented reality, virtual reality and the like, and then they'll be highly digitised modern training ranges designed for the Australian virtual capability of the future, and not the past. I just showed that because that's obviously one. That's just one very advanced training development there, it's probably what we're training there. Just a couple of slides to finish off on. we're really moving into making sure that the investments we're making around the country and infrastructure are spent as much as they can be with companies that are local to the places that we're making those investments. This is something government started talking to us about 4 years ago. How can we do better? Local industry capability. We run some pilot projects that are very well. All of the infrastructure projects now, the defence ones, require the bidders for those projects to explain how they will engage the local industry as part of that bid. And then we hold the letting company, the prime contractor, we hold them accountable for delivering that level of local content. Before we started that, we were at 60% of the take. Now we're averaging about 80% local content and much higher in some places. And finally, something I'm quite interested in. Indigenous procurement, we're pushing really hard to spend money with companies that are owned by Indigenous people. This is a priority of government, as part of its closing the gap strategy. Defence was early out of the blocks into this a few years ago. I'm pleased to say we've just crashed the $1 billion mark in the last 4 years of spending with Indigenous owned companies from defence contracts. It's something that we're very keen on. It says we are